Tufts Freeform, commercial-free, community-based radio, and we're a little slice of that community-based socialist alternative radio about to start an hour or two of programming, talk and music from a working-class democratic socialist perspective. We're here every other Sunday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Today we might end after an hour, we're not sure yet. We'll see how it goes. That's just a heads up for you, anyone downloading the show or listening on the archive function. Today is Sunday, December 4th. Is that correct? 4th, yeah. Let me look at my phone here. Yeah, Diego. And your host today, myself, Jeff, and...
Hi, Mike.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry, Diego. There you go. Boom.
Hello. Hello.
Diego's
okay,
here.
Mic check.
Diego wasn't here last week or 2 weeks ago. He's here now. Thank you for coming in, Diego. Riding your bike
Thank
in
you.
The freezing
yeah.
weather.
Oh, no, this is beautiful.
And it's great you're here because we're going to talk about the death of Fidel Castro in Cuba.
You hear me?
Yep. Yeah, you're
okay.
fine. You're
All
fine.
Right.
We're going to talk about the death of Fidel Castro in Cuba and what that means.
Funeral.
And Diego is from Cuba, right? You're from Cuba and El Salvador.
Well, right, born in Cuba, but raised in El Salvador, partially.
But you visit Cuba a lot. You've got family there.
And then
there.
Got here as a refugee during the Civil War.
And yeah, but you have family in Cuba still, yeah.
Yeah, my father, my cousins.
Yeah, so
half,
good. This is great.
Half-brothers.
Eyewitness Cuba Report here. And you were there last summer?
2015.
Last summer. 2015, right, yeah. Cool. So before we get to discussing Cuba, which everyone associates with socialism, and that's... Yes and no, actually,
no.
which we'll
Some
get
it's
into.
Economy, yeah. it's not.
We'll get into what that really is all about.
You know, the other day I was there was a cap. They said it was a mixed economy, socialist and a capitalist. So what it was is a situation where you can make profits, but there's a cap on your profits. So you don't go beyond, like here where there's no cap.
Right.
You can't go beyond 50,000.
Right.
Oh, no,
right.
I want more. I want millions.
This
I want trillions.
This is one of the Raul things. Problem with that is, though...
obviously, it's a problem.
I know you are. Just explaining the situation concretely
and, materialistically.
Yeah, and I was going to say, kind of also concretely, is just that basically, as you know, capital accumulates. Basically, the first critical thinkers of capitalism, whether it's Adam Smith or Karl Marx, would talk about how capital does tend towards concentration, especially Marx, the tendency towards the concentration of capital, tendency towards monopolization, et cetera. We'll get into that soon. Welcome to the show. If you're a regular listener, and thanks for listening. Thanks for writing into us on Facebook, Socialist Alternative Radio on Facebook. And by the way, we've got a little offshoot of Socialist Alternative Radio in a way. Actually, I shouldn't call them an offshoot. It's their own initiative. At Worcester State University in Worcester, there's a podcast of Worcester Socialist Alternative Radio. Just got off the ground a few weeks ago, going well. They don't have an over-the-air signal like we do.
Can you find it on the
internet?
Is there a site to go to?
There is, but try Facebook first. Worcester Socialist Alternative Radio, and that should direct you to the podcast site, and they've been doing a great job, and we hope to have them on the show one of these days. Here at Socialist Alternative Radio, coming out of Tufts University, Tufts Educational Radio, another name for the station here, Tufts Freeform 91.5 FM, WMFO, all that good stuff. And by the way, our legal ID, WMFO Medford, WMFO in Medford. All those different names for the same thing, college radio station that goes out over the air and can be picked up at WMFO.org using, the computer live stream and all that stuff, and archived at least one show, one or two shows are
for
archived.
2 weeks.
Yeah, and then also for us in particular, Socialist Alternative Radio, check out FenianRising.org. They've taken it upon themselves to archive our shows. They like it. They're
fans. And I found out, it's cool about that one. You can actually download it.
Yeah.
That program.
Yep.
And then burn it onto a CD if you want to make your own archives.
Yep. And also Fenian Rising on Facebook. And they probably direct you to their website too. Fenian, by the way.
They have other things too. And very interesting articles.
It's good.
Videos. And
yep.
And we now it's probably even more radical. It's probably gonna because of Trump,
Yeah. And they did all that without our, asking them to. They just on their own decided they like the show. I always wonder about the show. I wonder if people get the point of our show, which is not just, not just to provide alternative information from a sort of left, general left perspective. And that's okay when people do that. No big criticism of that. But We're actually much more partisan than that. We're actually functioning, active socialist people. And we want people to, yes, get alternative information, get some, punch a hole through the corporate media blockade and all that. But we also want people to actually get involved with socialism, with building socialism. And there are ways to do that, including getting involved with Socialist Alternative. Go to socialistalternative.org. Again, check us out on Facebook, Socialist Alternative Radio. And I don't know, if you're really into this stuff, if you really want sort of a wake up call more than the Trump election, if you want a wake up call to why you should become a socialist, this is kind of a funny angle on things. I was told that People Magazine, the print version, I guess it's the current issue, I don't read it, has a picture. They actually report, I thought it was all celebrity gossip or something, but they're actually reporting on the anti-Trump rallies, and Socialist Alternative actually initiated and organized a lot of anti-Trump rallies in many different cities around the country, including around here in Boston, Worcester, Providence, Rhode Island. And the Boston one had thousands of people at it. I forget the exact numbers. It was really big. The Worcester one was big for Worcester, over 400. Rhode Island one, over 400, also very big for Rhode Island. And these were excellent rallies, and I'm proud that, Socialist Alternative took the initiative so quickly after the election and did this. These were within a few days of the election, 3, 4, 5 days of the election. And point, though, is that somehow People Magazine is reporting on anti-Trump rallies, and they have this big picture of a rally with a big picture within the picture of Socialist Alternatives, like this big red flag we have that says Socialist Alternative,
my God.
Struggle, solidarity, socialism, with a
we've made it without them knowing.
I was told it even has the website like address on it or something.
That was like
in the
60s
address.
When they were like, how did that Che Guevara poster thing get there, and he's not dead yet?
Yeah.
And then from that crowd it kind of got big, and it went to it got published in France. And it just went wildfire.
Yeah, yeah.
Then 68 came and forget it.
Yep.
It was just spread everywhere.
Yeah.
With the,
So that was kind of cool to hear. And I haven't checked it out yet. Maybe I'll go to the library and I can't afford to read people.
Is that the CWI flag or?
I think it was the Socialist Alternative flag. Yeah.
Oh.
CWI, now that you mentioned it, I should have mentioned that earlier. We in Socialist Alternative here, we're in political solidarity with the Committee for Workers International, which is the beginnings of international socialist grouping of in about 45 to 50 countries of different socialist parties or socialist organizations, including some that are quite big, that have been able to elect people to parliaments or congresses in different countries. In
Israel,
do we have an
Israel branch?
Yeah, there's an Israeli Palestinian branch. Actually, we believe in working class unity,
yeah.
So we organize people together. Although the Palestinian part of any political organizing in Palestine is under siege by the Israeli secret police and the police, as well as the sort of religious right among the Palestinian movement. So it's tough, and most of our Palestinian members are not able to.
Two enemies. You have one that's supposed to should be on your side, but they're a right wing religious zealots.
Yeah,
and then you have the state of Israel,
Israeli state, and we don't have our Palestinian members. They have to be very, very careful about public speaking and all that kind of thing. And in Israel, most of our members refuse military service if they're already like interested or members. If they join or are interested in the Israeli section around that time where they have to do military service, a certain percentage of the membership there, it's pretty big membership. Not that big a member. It's a big membership, but a big percentage of that membership has refused military service, and that comes with a 7-year prison sentence or some sort of community service.
So if you refuse to go, I'm 18, I'm an Israeli, I live in Israel, I refuse to go to the military, I get 7 years?
7 years, or I think there's a community service clause, but I'm not 100% sure about that. And so they've sacrificed a lot. There's also people, of course, that join when they're older, they've already done military service or whatever. But also Nigeria, big grouping within the CWI, Committee for Workers International. Ireland, there's three members of parliament, and there's other left wing members of parliament in Ireland that work in alliance with us. There's a lot going on around the world. Believe it or not, you're not going to hear about it in the corporate media, but a lot of resistance to the kind of populist right-wing populist increases in certain countries. Now, if you take a real international view of what's going on politically, you can see gains by the left in certain countries in response to, you know, the economic crisis happening in certain areas, or the economic slowdown, like in the Eurozone and all that. And it's not just all like Trump figures or right-wing populists everywhere. Although there are enough of them that you realize, if you pay attention to international politics, that Trump is not a unique phenomenon. I don't think it's a unique phenomenon in U.S. politics. I mean, I'm old enough to remember Reagan. Reagan was a Trump figure in many, many respects.
The reason I have to leave El Salvador is because of him.
Yeah. And then there was, in our history, other blustering right-wing populists, Andrew Jackson and so on. Our history, meaning history of the United States, Trump is not, unfortunately, a unique figure in his ignorance and bluster and straight-up capitalist, being a straight-up capitalist.
The whole Cuban thing in 1898 was Teddy Roosevelt, right?
And he that's Roosevelt's a good example of right populism. He even ran independent, I believe, one time, but not from any kind of left wing thing. But what he would do is he would do just what Trump is doing. It's a good example you brought up. He would attack monopolies. At the same time, he would invade foreign countries for U.S. imperialism. Or you know, promote that
don't
sort
jinx
of thing.
Us, don't, we don't want a repetition of that.
See, that's Cuba. The thing about history does not repeat itself, but to say there are no similar trends or similarities is just not true. Trump has his antecedents, and Trump also, people will say, liberals especially, will say, you know, this guy's the worst racist ever. Well, two things. The ruling class is filled with horrible, horrible racists. I mean,
Hillary's
really
up there
filthy,
too.
I mean, sexist,
you
racist
can see,
people.
It's like when there was a thing I seen about Nixon, or the lost tapes of Nixon. How, you know, he started the whole...
Great example, Nixon, yeah.
And he said the N-word. How many times did that guy say the N-word?
Yep. Nixon has a lot of...
Behind closed doors.
Yep. Nixon, Nixon didn't do so much a right-wing populist thing the way Trump and, say, Teddy Roosevelt did and others. But Nixon is interesting. Nixon administration, we mentioned on the show before in this context, if you want to look back at the last 50 years and find the most progressive legislation that's gotten passed by Congress, it was during the Nixon reign because
of
the
us.
Mass movement. Yeah, the mass movement on the street from the left, starting against the Vietnam War and then blossoming into many other movements. That put so much pressure on capitalism.
He told Henry Kissinger one day, that's all the people outside, you know, protesting. It's like, Henry, they're out there.
Yeah,
you know, just like that. It's like he was scared.
Yeah, and they don't have the kind of analysis and that analytical methodology that a Marxist would have, or even someone just influenced by Marxism, to realize the social base for the movement at that time, except for within the military, when the military was very working class, but except for when the military was mostly upper middle class people kind of leading the way and populating a lot of those movements, not totally, but to a certain extent. So there actually wasn't a revolutionary threat to the government, but they believed there was. They were like, oh, this could be it, you know. Now, of course, we're in a situation where the ruling class, and with all its racist demagogues like Trump or whoever, they are overconfident. They're you know, you look what happened with the stock market, right? Stock market before Trump got elected is crashing. Because of the uncertainty, and that's actually something that the corporate media gets kind of right. They talk about investors don't like uncertainty. They don't say it that clearly sometimes, but they talk about uncertainty and the stock market responding to uncertainty. That's kind of true. They want to be sure the big capitalists which way to go with their investments, and so they, you know, even the devil you know is better than the devil you don't know in some cases. And they were putting a lot of them put their weight behind Hillary, and. And when that wasn't clear that was going to work, they started to get a little nervous. And then Trump gets elected, and they're you know, initially, like that morning or whatever that he got elected, there was still a continued fall in the stock market. But very quickly it rebounded as word kind of got around that Trump is going to, we're going to be able to use him, and we're going to go for it, because look how weak the labor movement is, look how weak the left is. it's our time. Let's use Trump. Really, you know, his regime, his administration will do things that will benefit us, blah, blah, blah. And they just changed their tune and got wanted to get used to it. So now the corporate media is like trying to normalize Trump, trying to say, you know, yeah, we got to get behind Trump in a certain way. Even the liberals, even the Warren and Sanders have mouthed things like this, getting behind Trump to a certain extent. They also criticize him. Our position, Socialist Alternative, and I think the position of a lot of people in America is no, we're not going to normalize Trump. Nope, we're not going to get used to it. We're not going to say it's the way things should be. He lost the popular vote. That's not a plug for Clinton. If you listen to the show, you know that we have severe criticisms of both corporate political parties, the Democratic Party and the Republican Party, and we supported Jill Stein as a step towards building a new work party for working people that would not take corporate money, etc. And we have no love for the Democratic Party elites or for Clinton. And as part of that, and we severely criticized her. We didn't forget, in other words, the record of the Obama administration, the record of Clinton, and we went over those in a lot of detail. Right now, yeah, we're focused on Trump. He got in. But it is worth noting, he's not only has he lost the popular vote, but if you read the New York Times, which I don't, I actually do, but I can't really recommend it. But the New York Times is hilarious because it's just like this propaganda sheet basically for capitalism, and so they just do the same thing any raw propaganda sheet would do. That's selection and emphasis. So they select certain stories for the front page. People are going to glance at those more than others. All that kind of corporate media analysis. And so I'm reading it the other day, and there's literally half an inch of print about how the popular vote has actually increased even more for Clinton. Like, it went up another percentage point, another million something voters.
Was that a result of recounting in Wisconsin?
No, it's a result of just even this week, this past week, results still coming in. It was not at all a recount. It was just the results still coming in. And so it was like if the Democratic Party elites or the New York Times had any interest, and there's shades of 2000 here with Gore and all that, if they had any interest of actually contesting the election in a real way, if they were really that much different from Trump and company, they are different in some ways, but I think in approach more than in economic fundamentals and more than in imperialist fundamentals, of course. So if they were really into screwing stuff up and fighting for some sort of difference, they would be contesting the heck out of this election. They would be in the streets. They'd be organizing mass protests. Now, who's organizing mass protests? Like us, little Socialist Alternative in the grand scheme of things is organizing mass protests in the street and other groups. And we're going to get into that more, by the way, in a minute. So now Trump is like, you have the liberals trying to figure out how they're going to maneuver and manipulate rather than challenge the fundamental Trumpism, the fundamental existence of Trump and his coterie in power. And you have, of course, the big business types getting used to the new world order, so to speak, or the new U.S. order, so to speak, and really going for it, figuring that the movement is too weak. Now, we are cautiously optimistic that people are going to fight back. We actually had the perspective that before the election was even over, that no matter who got elected, there would not be much of a honeymoon period like there sometimes is with, especially with a Democrat. There would in fact be struggle right away, even with the gatekeepers of the NGO leaderships, the whole liberal, the people that spend more time arguing against a third party, a left third party, than they do arguing against the Republicans. Those type of people, right? Even with them, there was going to be resistance to Clinton much, much sooner than anyone would predict, most corporate media or whatever would predict. Now, and I don't mean from the right, I mean from things like the Dakota Pipeline, Black Lives Matter, stuff like that. And that stuff did continue. Black Lives Matter protests continued despite the elections, anti-pipeline protests, the big one in North Dakota, but also community ones, even here in West Roxbury, continued during the election. Usually when elections happen in the U.S., presidential elections, they purposefully, in terms of the amount of money put into the propaganda around them, they take up all the air in the room, so to speak. You know, there's not much left for activism, especially from the left. and everyone's buying into the system. That's one of the things that was most disappointing about the election to me. I don't know if you ran into this at all, but I would run into people supporting Hillary, supporting Clinton, who consider themselves liberal or left. Now, I think that's an oxymoron. I think we have to have a baseline of what is really left, and that would be A, anti-capitalist.
Yeah, that's neoliberalism.
And B, right. And real leftism, even in the U.S., must have a baseline definition, right?
And now you have neo-fascism.
Yeah, but before we get into that, what would be the baseline? We've talked about this before. For the left in the U.S., anti-capitalist, one, mm-hmm. and two, not supporting capitalist political parties like the Democrats and Republicans. That should be like the baseline. Unfortunately, it's not. There's this huge confusion, often engineered by the corporate media, where they call someone that's in the Democratic Party left-wing. That's an oxymoron. That just doesn't work in reality. But for that, if you push everything to the right, then what used to be liberal or conservative gets called left at a certain point, and that's happened here. But also you have confusion because the left is small, the labor movement's in retreat and all that. You have confusion about what real left is because most people don't run into it, you know? So they're taught to say Democratic Party equals some sort of left. Well, it's not. It's not at all in any real sense, but they're taught to say that. They parrot it. So what I'm getting at is there are activists, some that should know better, some that even do know better, that pretend when they were defending voting for Clinton, they would pretend they were left, right, or liberals, and they would go back to these very conservative arguments in defense of the system. Things like she's got experience, remember that one? That's saying that you believe in imperialism, right? That you believe in the goals of imperialism. Yeah, she's got experience in voting for the Iraq War, experience in
Libya,
Syria. That's a lot of experience, quote unquote, of doing what U.S. imperialism wants.
They even caught her. Democracy Now! Showing the clip of her going, "We came, we conquered, he's done." Yep. Talk about Gaddafi.
Yeah. Oh, there were other clips of her calling black youth predators and all that, you know. There was a lot of, anyway, I don't want to rehash all the, it's important to keep that memory alive because they really want to bury it, including the liberals. But what I'm getting at is this point of, just to use those examples, of people that thought they were liberals or left who would argue vociferously over Facebook and in person, at work, you know, in social settings with me and others, in defense of voting for Clinton, and they would retreat to the most conservative arguments. And that's one of the dangers of lesser evilism and the dangers of being stuck in a two-party duopoly, which is basically a corporate duopoly, which means you're basically forced, if you believe in that paradigm, even in a quote-unquote strategic voting way, you're forced to defend the system in very conservative ways. Very like, yeah, you defend their economic policies, which are pro-capitalist. You defend their international policies, which are pro-imperialist and pro-capitalist. So it's absolutely, that was a real setback in consciousness among a layer of the population. Now that leaves a lot of other people, right, who voted for Stein, voted for the little protest left votes, didn't vote at all, but are still political. That is, there is a section of people like that. People on the, you know, progressive, in a progressive sense, and people that that said, okay, that's it, no more. And that's what we've run into, the Trump as a wake up call. Whether they did hold their nose and voted for Clinton, or whether they didn't vote or whatever, we had like within a 2-day span, 500 people right into Socialist Alternative on the web wanting to join, right? This happened right after the election, when they found out from who we were through the demonstrations and so on. And that is a phenomena happening with Trump. Now, I'm not making that argument that some, what I would call ultra-left people make, that, oh, well, vote in the worst idiot and of the two idiots or whatever. Like I heard this back during Reagan. Yeah, ultra-left people say, vote in Reagan, it will trigger more demonstrations and more opposition and so on. And show capitalism without a smiley face and all that kind of argument. I don't agree with that. I gotta say really quick, I don't agree with that. We don't agree with that. Not again that Hillary would be any better, just be different tactics and so on, but we don't like either one. You can't have more than one enemy at one time and fight both enemies in a battle. If the US left and people that want to be left-wing, like liberals that are, think they're moving to the left, is you can't get your head around the fact that we can have two enemies at one time and two battles we have to fight at one time. You're hopeless for this struggle because that's the reality. The ruling class is not a monolith. They don't always agree on how to repress people, how to advance the goals of capitalism, and they'll put forward different strategies at different times based on if they're getting resistance or not. And if you can't see through that and you just keep voting in one capitalist representative or another, like someone told me a story yesterday, and we'll get back to what you're going to say in a second. I just want to finish the thought. Sorry. Someone told me a story yesterday of someone that Trump promised something. Then, oh yeah, it was this guy, one of his cabinet people was a straight up Goldman Sachs banker.
Yep.
So this person knew, this guy's
Secretary of Treasury.
Yeah, this is a person in Social Alternative who knew somebody who voted Trump. And then when that Trump voter saw that Trump put this banker as Secretary of Treasury, Goldman Sachs guy, the guy said, "Oh, I hate Trump now. I'm never going to vote for Trump again. I don't like Trump. I'm, you know, blah blah." Now that's good. But that's also inevitable. Elections are just a snapshot in time. Consciousness changes rapidly among layers of the population based on all sorts of things that are happening objectively with the economy and so on. Whether or not they run into, you know, whether or not they hear this pro radio or little radio program, or whether they run into a socialist organizer of any sort or whatever, they come to conclusions that may be good in the moment. But the thing is, sustained, organized resistance and building an alternative, that's what Social Alternative is about, obviously. And that's something that we have yet to see in reaction to Trump. What could happen with Trump is that every time Trump breaks another populist promise, he places the blame for whatever happens as a result or around that promise on his scapegoats, you know, immigrants, the coded racism of the Trump campaign, the sexism and misogyny of the Trump campaign. That's my memory of Reagan. Reagan exposed himself many times as a straight up tool, an idiot, actually, tool of capitalism. And yet there were you didn't have all the workers that voted for him. And I'm not saying it's most workers didn't vote for him, but of a large section of workers that did vote for him, you didn't have them all of a sudden say, "I was wrong," right? They would just buy into the racism, or they would not just make that conclusion right away because they didn't have any alternative in front of them. Some did. I remember that time. There was actually a big march in Washington soon after Reagan got in, led by the AFL-CIO. It was quite big, and there were people there. And I was in the Bakery Workers Union at the time, and there were people there that had voted for Reagan and were really embarrassed by it and were really sickened by it and were wanted something different. But again, fast forward to now, their children, or maybe they, as they're getting older, they might make the same mistake again. If there's no way, clear way forward, people are going to play this rotten right-wing, you know, versus liberal populist game. And it's really still within the parameters of the system, not building a new party for working people. It's going to be sad. Sorry, I spoke over you before.
No, I had a question. Like, obviously, I was 1 year old in 79 when Reagan was about to get in.
Yeah.
Who was his opposite? Who was the other guy running against him?
Mondale? I want to remember correctly.
Was he a Democrat, obviously, right?
Yeah. Well, Mondale was 84. That was one of the times Reagan ran for re-election. Reagan also, and this could happen with any bourgeois capitalist politician, but they go through they do get exposed, they do get unpopular. But again, if an alternative isn't there, then if the anger is being channeled through the Democratic Party or something, by the gatekeepers of the Democratic Party and the NGOs and all that, then you don't get a change. So Reagan became extremely unpopular very quickly. But no one was, except for the little bit that I mentioned, there wasn't that much opposition, organized opposition. On the surface, there wasn't, the labor movement did that rally, but they didn't do, "Hey, let's form a new political party" or anything, and they were stronger then. So then Reagan, there was an assassination attempt on Reagan, and then they played the nationalist card, and he got more popular after that and so on. But Carter. It was Carter, 1980. I'm sorry. Yes.
Oh, it was Carter.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
And the reason I'm like ashamed I don't remember that is because we've had a really good information on the show
guy.
About Carter. Well, Carter was horrible. Carter, see, Carter now has this reputation of.
In Cuba, we call him Mani.
Yeah. You know, he goes around building houses or helping to build houses for Habitat for Humanity, or he was doing that recently in the recent years. He also had cancer. And he's also criticized U.S. foreign policy in the Middle East in recent years. So he comes across as like a. You know, some sort of progressive even to some people. Nope. The reality of Carter was he and people like Ted Kennedy and other liberal icons, they led the charge from 1976 to about 79, 80. They led the charge of neoliberalism. They were, this will hint of conspiracy theory, and I totally don't mean it that way. It's just the facts of what happened. You actually had meetings of like the Business Roundtable and other big corporate institutions in the late 60s, going into the early 70s. And they were like, yeah, post-war upswing, post-war boom, big profits, but our profit rate is slowing. The unions are getting fat from their point of view. This is the bosses now. They're too strong. Let's test it. Let's test the waters. Then the 74, 75 recession accelerated all that. This became like a crisis. Inflation popped up. Then it was like, we have to do something. This is big business talking again. We have to do something. Their doing something was taking the liberal flank that the AFL-CIO supported and other sort, you know, institutions that shouldn't support the Democratic Party. They took the liberal flank to start the attack. Again, Tsongas, Kennedy, Carter, people like that. And their whole attack, and you can go look this up, I'm not making any of it up, was deregulation. They deregulated trucking, busted the Teamsters long haul representation of truckers. They went after airlines, deregulated airlines. We're suffering for that to this day. Airlines deregulated in 1978. They deregulated telecom, you know, so no more AT&T.
How many plane crashes due to that deregulation? From that period on. You know, well, how many crashes could have prevented?
Exactly. How much union busting? How much leg room did you lose? I mean, there's like a whole...
They got these planes in America. No, yeah. I was serious.
You're right.
And they go to El Salvador and they fix them in El Salvador and they'll have like, oh, I didn't screw this thing in. Whatever, I'm only getting paid $300 a month. So.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah, I understand.
People
yeah.
don't know that. That's why I never will fly in America. I'll never get on a plane that's American. I got either Air Canada, Lufthansa, anything.
I unfortunately have flown American planes. Anyway.
I get scared. Like, you know, I really like, yeah, this is not.
It's not a pleasant thing anymore, obviously, as anyone that has to fly knows. And by the way, I'm not flying around because I have the money. Actually, I'm flying to conferences that I don't have to pay the whole fare on usually. The other thing is Carter did was deregulate. I mean, he was pro-nuke, by the way, pro-nuclear power, which hurt really badly, the environment and people. Remember, Three Mile Island, I think, happened during his watch, if I'm not mistaken.
Right?
Yeah, if I'm not mistaken. And, you know, on and on. There's a whole list of now, deregulation doesn't sound like the worst thing to a lot of Americans because it's placed in this propaganda offensive of neoliberalism as somehow, oh, we just create more competition and lower prices and all that. Well, if you study anything that's been deregulated, it gets supposedly breaks up a small, like a monopolistic situation. It gets re-monopolized extremely quickly. Because again, like back to what we were saying at the beginning of the show, the tendency for the concentration of capital is a constant trend under capitalism, a constant a through line throughout capitalism. So, yeah, they did that to bust unions. The deregulation was to bust unions and increase corporate profits. You know, privatization, outsourcing, all that stuff came together under the Carter administration. Reagan came in continuing Carter's policies. People think Reagan invented stuff. Reagan, in some ways, and this is very, very qualified, but in some ways did things Carter, in a certain dynamic, more progressive than Carter. Like, remember Reagan's amnesty of immigrants in 1986?
That's me.
Yeah.
I was part of that.
Yep. Reagan, Carter cut corporate taxes. Reagan, I think, continued that policy. But there was one point where he, like, raised taxes a little bit. I don't know. It's if you look back, it's based again on things that were happening at the time. But both of them had the general perspective of reinvigorating that their regimes, they don't do it as individuals, of reinvigorating capitalism and attacking and smashing unions. And internationally, just a total nightmare. Carter administration supported the dictatorship in Indonesia, and at the time, the massacre, people were calling it genocide in East Timor. I mean, you could go through a whole foreign policy thing that that was just, you know, so they supported Shah in Iran, the Carter administration, that made Carter look just like Reagan, basically. Although Reagan was the one that had the rhetoric because they sensed weakness and so on, and there's a lot of reasons for this, a lot of context for this I don't have time for, where they reinvigorated aspects of the Cold War that were not so much in evidence during the Carter administration. You know, Reagan challenging Mr. Gorbachev to tear down that wall while they're building walls, while U.S. Imperials is building walls, other places. Anyway, so Carter was a freaking nightmare for working class people and young people, and the beginning of all the stuff that we're suffering from. Not the beginning, that's even wrong, but he intensified and restarted a movement away from Keynesianism, a movement of a more direct assault by capitalism on workers' rights, which, you know, happened in the 60s and 50s and 40s and so on, but there was they got more resistance, you know, the mass movement in the 60s and 70s from the labor movement, from the civil rights movement, from the Black Power movement, women's movement, etc. That's the thing about Nixon. Progressive legislation under Nixon would make you know, if you didn't understand it, you'd be like, well, how did that happen? You know, most conservative court, Supreme Court, most conservative president, and yet one of the most conservative presidents, and yet all this legislation getting passed, like Roe versus Wade and all that.
So it's possible that Trump may do things like you said, like Nixon, where he has no choice.
Well, that's a great point.
So, you know, like he'll be looking out the window.
Yes.
The people are coming. They're going to bust down the, you know.
That's a great, great point. Now, again, this is not.
In other words, can we push him to do like what Nixon had to do?
We've made that point in public already. Like when we organized these mass rallies in certain cities, we had follow-up meetings that sometimes, like the one in Boston, had 400 people to it. This is after the anti-Trump rally, right after the election that Social Alternative initiated. One of the points we make at these follow-up meetings is that, yes, we can make gains even under the Trump administration, because historically that has happened. Again, this is not to say, hey, it's going to be easy under Trump. In fact, just the opposite. People aren't prepared for how bad it's going to be. You know, because what I said earlier, every shift in policy to the right, so to speak, if you want to use that paradigm, in terms of giving the capitalists more power, like, you know, lower taxes and all that, will be accompanied most likely by a attack on immigrants, Muslims, people of color, some sort of diversion, some sort of scapegoating tactic. And that plays well, unfortunately, in a lot of America, obviously.
And I've gotten reactions like that from this white guy on the street, random, and he looked at me and he goes, your days are over in this country. And he just walked away. Obviously a Trump supporter.
You should have said, what
right
you,
after the, you no, right after
me,
the election.
What do you mean?
I'm like, I'm looking, no, I was so distraught. I was just looking, did this guy really say that to me?
Oh,
he just walked
man.
By me and said, yeah. Your days are over in
well,
this
we
country.
Well, we got threats by right-wing white supremacists for the rallies that we set up. So we were...
There's a lot of hate crime going on all of a sudden.
So exactly. So we had marshals and stuff, and we're looking around. You know how many showed up? Trumpistas or Trumpsters or chumps? You know how many showed up?
Zero.
Three.
Oh, three.
Two, outnumbered. Two guys were there. We knew they were Trump supporters based on some stuff we overheard, because we had people listening in and then reporting back to the moderators of the rally, and so we sent some people over to watch them, and they just left real quick. Then there was one guy there who was just like a normal person who was like just kind of an idiot, though. The market will there's something Trump says I don't like, but the market will take care of it and all that. So a few people just sort of politely discussed with him, and he wasn't a threat to anybody. That was it. All their bluster, man. And the thing about, this is going to sound a little extreme to some of our listeners maybe, but think about, it's sort of that Woody Allen thing. I don't know if you ever saw Woody Allen's jokes about, I don't mean to invoke Woody Allen, he's got problems, of course, but he's got these kind of, sometimes he has these jokes about how to deal with fascism. So there's that one, we talked about this in the air one time, I swear, where it's a little clip from one of his movies, and he's talking with these like dressed up New York liberal types, And they're saying, well, the best way to combat fascism is to have an essay in the New Yorker ridiculing them and making them look silly. And so Woody Allen does his little, like, clear the throat thing. You know, well, actually, I think the best way is to go and get baseball bats and chains and go out and meet them on the streets. It's really funny watching this little Woody Allen, older Woody Allen guy say this, you know. And so the liberal goes, oh, that's violent or something. And Woody Allen's like, well, I still like the bat solution or something like that, you know. And there's this guy in Worcester in Socialist Alternative from...
Woody Allen is Jewish, right?
Yeah. Oh, but I can tell you another story. This guy, his name is Santiago. He's from Ecuador, I think. He's in Social Alternative for a time in Worcester. And they had a running joke, because it's serious stuff in a lot of countries, obviously, the fascists, the neo-right, neo-fascists and all that.
Oh, Ecuador now is at that point.
Yeah, so he's like, they had a running joke of if they'd run into any of that stuff in the street, they would be like, time to get the bat. They'd be like... And, you know, I'm not trying to make light of the right-wing threat. It's really horrible. Hate crimes are up and all that. All I'm trying to say is as emphatically as possible.
Well, look what's happening in Ukraine and Germany.
Of course.
You got the right sector in the Ukraine. Oh. You got the Golden Dawn in Greece.
In Greece, yep.
Internationally.
Well, that reminded me, I wanted to say earlier about the Trump-like characters. Again, the ruling class can barf up someone like Trump anywhere around the world, the capitalist ruling class. So you have people like, you'll remember some of these names, right? Berlusconi in Italy got elected many times, complete buffoon, just like Trump, but, you know, carrying out the will of the capitalists with a certain right-wing populist elan that people unfortunately responded to. I was always like, when Berlusconi was in power, I was actually in Italy a couple times when he was in power, and I'd be like, what the hell's wrong with you people? Now anyone, you come here and say that about Trump. And that was just my visceral reaction. I understood why Berlusconi could get power. You know, money rules, they constrict the choices and all that. But Italy at least has other parties, you know. So I'm like, as a worker, you're going to vote for Berlusconi? What the hell?
You know, and also anyway. That percentage but that you have also, in the seat is represented. It's not like all hands down, all Republicans got the House, and you know. Yeah. No. In Europe, it's like, well, if it's 12% this party, well, the 12% is that party.
Yeah, proportional representation.
So if that 12% says no, then guess what?
Yep.
Things get vetoed.
Yep. Well, also, you have Sarkozy in France, another example. You have people like Marie Le Pen, not so much the father Le Pen, but the senior, her father, but Marie Le Pen of the Front National, the fascist party in France. That party's undergoing this, like, whitewashing or whatever you want to call it, where they're not so fascist anymore to some people, even though they really are, because she consciously manipulated, she and her people consciously manipulated the media in France. So now they're polling like, you know, higher than they ever did. They're still not going to take power or anything, but they're polling higher. And that's, so you go on this whole list of people like Trump that aren't really fascists, but they're certainly right-wing populists. And by their getting in power, it emboldens the fascists. And this is a very, very serious thing, including the United States. The Ku Klux Klan is still around. And all these...
They said, thanks to us, we got him in.
Yeah, all these white supremacist groups, you know, are still around. And the hate crimes are up and all that. But what I was trying to say earlier is just like, I get so... It's both ridiculous and just frightening that people talk about... when someone really fascist shows up, I'm not talking about Trump even. I'm talking about a real fascist shows up, even if they're emboldened by Trump or whatever. We don't believe in giving them a public space for anything. You know, we don't believe fascists have a right to set up a demonstration anywhere. They don't get the public library, they don't get the street, they don't get anything. No public forum for fascists. That's like a rule. The left learned the hard way. During World War II. With the Nazis and all that, but other examples as well.
Spain to
now,
Germany
liberals
to
are
Italy.
Like even the ACLU. Like I used to be in the ACLU, and I quit over this thing called Skokie. I don't know if that's before your time, but the ACLU was defending the right for Nazis to march in Skokie, Illinois. And it was very controversial, and I said, "Rip, rip, rip!" There goes the ACLU membership, because even then, I don't even think I was in Socialist Alternative or the precursor Socialist Alternative. I think I was like just...
What was their view that? Oh, freedom of speech, so everybody's covered.
There you go,
that.
Yeah, freedom of speech. Well, not freedom for murder, not freedom for lynching, not freedom for these things that the real fascists... Again, I'm not talking about Trump or even Reagan or anyone like that. Trump, I like the fact that people protested Trump's rallies. I mean, we did that too. We're now protesting the Trump, normalization of Trump, and Inauguration Day, which we're going to get into in detail today. That's all great, but you know, protesting that stuff, that's good. But in terms of like, we're talking notching it up. When there's a fascist there, it's shut them down. It shut them down. It's not let them have any public space. And you actually have to argue with liberals about that. It's really freaking sad. You have to sit there and say, no, fascism is a little different than your debater club at college. I'm sorry, you know, your debater society or whatever at college. This is a whole different ballgame where if they get the streets, then especially, and this is a capitalist phenomenon, they get the streets, they get some of the people that are desperate because of capitalism. And I mean, I see homeless people like with the big American flag and stuff. You know, these people are—they're the kind of people the Nazis organized at first. The rich, there were rich Nazis, of course, at first. But then they would organize people that were so desperate, so desperate.
Even
that,
prisoners, people, yeah. You know, let's get those guys.
A section of them, you know, so desperate, and use them as thugs, use them to terrorize people, and before you know it, you got nowhere for real free speech. You got nowhere for anyone to go out and protest or say anything. I mean, look at the cops. They got all excited about Trump, all the so-called police unions and all that. They're endorsing Trump and supporting Trump, a lot of them. And this is after they've been militarized, pumped up. You know, I mean, how many courts are indicting cops for murder when they murder people, especially black youth?
Zero.
Yeah, isn't it like zero or like very, very few? And actually, the New York Times.
Well, it was that guy from South Carolina. He's off.
Yeah, I know. That's what I mean. That's why it's in my head.
So
that was ridiculous. I saw that. I was incensed. I was just, you know, it's just insane.
And it's not about black. I mean, it was a black cop. It's about authority, abusing authority.
It's always been. It's always been about that. But it is. It's at the same time racist, and even a black cop can inculcate. Or to stick around, carry out orders and a kind of set type of policing that's imbued with racism.
Well, that's why I recommend people to check out F the Police from NWA.
Back in the day.
The first lyric of Ice Cube hits the nail, the black cop showing out for the white cop.
Well, this is...
And they wrote that, because I watched a movie about, you know, Straight Outta Compton.
Yep.
They wrote that of a situation that they got into literally when they were writing.
Yep.
They were doing the album, and they came out of the studio, and they were harassed by a black cop and white cop.
Yep.
And, of course, the black cop was showing off, and he wrote that. And that inspired that song. So that song was based on a reality, you know, a reality check.
Yep. And anyway,
and the FBI went after them, like, you know, but they took that and said, oh yeah, well, we have rights too, you know, and it kind of backfired.
Right.
And actually made their group popular and that particular song very popular.
Well, that's the thing. This reminds me of what you said earlier, where you were questioning, can we win anything under Trump? And I think for some liberals to say yes is somehow saying, well, it's not that bad. That's not what we mean. It's bad. It's going to be worse than you think, liberal. It's going to be really bad. Listen, liberal, it's going to be really, really worse than you think. Because a lot of liberals, especially the ones that spout off, they're upper middle class, and they don't understand how policies hit working people. And by the way,
they're comfortable in the little zone, you know?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. That's
not bothering
exactly what I'm
me,
saying.
So I don't care.
Yeah, they'll get used to Trump in their own ways. Not when they're talking, but when in terms of their lifestyle. What is on the ground for working people? By the way, when we talk about working class and working people in this show, we're not engaging in the stereotype of the corporate media that's really pathetic, actually, and really horrible of, white working class is some, or the working class is some white guy, older white guy driving a pickup truck with an American flag or something. That is such a tiny percentage of the working class. It's not even funny. The working class in America is mostly women, very, very much people of color, maybe not a majority, but very, very close. And most, even the white workers, and also young, much younger than the stereotype, and most white workers did not vote for Trump. Okay, and there's a lot of good data coming out about who actually voted for Trump, and it was actually more upper middle class people, but yes, some percentage of working class people, unfortunately. And then if you break down the working class vote, it was a lot of white people.
And also Hispanics.
It was
17%
that's
Hispanic.
That's what's weird. 8% black vote for Trump.
For Trump, 17%. Yeah. And boom, those are those Cubanos down there in Miami celebrating Fidel's death, you know?
So the reality is that the policies of a Trump administration or any administration, actually, the Obama administration included, they put forward capitalist policies that bite deep and hurt deeply among tens of millions of working class people before the upper echelons even feel a pinch, even feel like the slightest ill wind, you know, or anything. And again, that's not the kind of analysis you're hearing in the corporate media. I'm not addressing that at Trump voters at all. I'm addressing that in general. People that didn't vote, people that voted for Hillary, people that voted for... there are workers, by the way, that voted, like me, that voted for... to the left of the Democratic Party, voted for Jill Stein or whoever, and Amir, Ajuma Baraka, and so on. So there's this... when we talk about working class on this show, we're talking about young, primarily women, tons of people of color, you know, and so on. And even also, yeah.
Okay, and working class is also, if you need to sell your labor to survive, and you
that's
can't
right,
not
broad,
sit back and say, I'm going to be peachy now.
Yeah.
And go, you know.
Yeah. A broad swath of the working class. Yeah. Now, a higher paid worker that can't afford to quit, and like you're just describing, Diego, can't afford to quit and not sell their labor to some corporation, they're actually getting paid so much they're probably going to identify with not with working class people. Like, there's a whole range, like where I work at Harvard, there it's very top heavy with administrators and supervisors and stuff, basically cops for the upper level management, and the average person in that situation is not going to identify with the rest of the workers there, and then therefore probably not going to identify with the working class as a whole, except when there are exceptional times where even though that layer of the working class gets crunched, you know, through, you know, like the 2000, there was a lot of stories in the Great Recession of 2007, 2008 and beyond, where people that had those middle management positions or lower management positions all of a sudden found themselves without jobs. They were just in complete shock. And how quickly they made it into the streets, you know.
That's what happened in Shaw's. I remember the first ones going, those guys making $20 an hour and up. Like you said, management.
I'm talking about
those
even
are the
more.
Those first ones to go. And then now we start getting rid of hours here for these guys who are making $9, $10
right,
an hour.
Right. So, I was thinking even higher, but I get your point, speaking of wages, why don't we start to move on a little bit from a general Trump, don't get used to Trump, protest Trump.
Oh, you want to hear my mother
come
said?
Come out on January 20th.
She called me in Osado, said, you know what they're saying? No más trampa. No más trampa means
nice.
Trap.
Yep.
So it's like, this is an idea for us to demonstrate in the Spanish community.
No más trampa.
No más trampa.
No más trampa.
Trampa means trap.
Yep.
But it sounds like trampa, Trump.
Yeah, and it is a trap. That's really excellent. That's really brilliant.
So that's something they came up in El Salvador, you know, if we're going to start, you know, doing some, because Salvadorian politics over there is also... it's interlinked with the U.S., so it's going to get harder in Central America and a lot of these countries.
That's really, really brilliant.
Right wing.
No más trampa. Yeah,
no
I like that.
Trampa.
So we're going to come back to Trump in various ways, but the main point is January 20th is Inauguration Day. There's going to be protests in Washington, D.C. itself, but more importantly in some ways, protests in cities all around the country. Socialist Alternative is involved in organizing and helping to organize protests all around the country on that day. Mainly, hopefully, student walkouts in high schools and colleges. Some groups, I would consider this a bit ultra-left, we're not doing this, are calling for like a general strike situation. I can't see that coming off personally unless unions were doing that. Although there is an example we talked about before we went on air. I did see this happen once in the U.S. 2006, the anti-immigration movement starting in L.A. and going out through the country hit a nerve among the immigrant community, called for a general strike on May 1st, International Workers' Day, and it got such an echo that you could truly say in some cities they shut down some retail and some manufacturing operations and transportation, especially in some big cities.
Throughout the country.
And where they didn't shut things down, they had big protests and stuff. In Boston, big protests. We were involved in that. We, in fact, started a May Day coalition out of that, May 1st coalition out of that. Socialist Alternative started that. So that was huge, and I can't rule that out again. That could happen in some cities. There could be organizing that I'm not aware of, or that Socialist Alternative isn't aware of, that will result in people leaving their workplaces. And if you feel like you can, you know, go for it. But I think the general strike part of that is a little dicier. But the student walkout, there have been many, many student walkouts against Trump, primarily in high schools with, you know, majority students of color, but not necessarily. And in all cases, in Seattle, we helped organize a high school student walkout against Trump within a couple days of the election. It was Shama Sawant, Social Alternative, and other people in Seattle. And anyway, we're just giving it a shot around the country. So look out for, if you are in a high school or you are in a college and you want to help organize a student walkout, you know, a DIY, do it yourself. But also, if you want to do it in a more organized way, which might work better, which I think would work better, try to get in touch with other people working on January 20th protests, including Socialist Alternative. You can write info@socialistalternative.org. Go to socialistalternative.org. Go to Facebook, facebook.com/socialistalternativeUSA, et cetera. Twitter. I don't know if anyone does Twitter. Twitter at socialist alt. So anyway, January 21st, also, the Million Women's March. I don't know if you heard about that. Wow, I don't know if it's really going to happen, but it sounds like it is. And I know there are some people from Social Alternative going to that. Also in Washington. So the day after these big inauguration anti-Trump protests in Washington and in many other cities around the country, there will be the International Women's Day March in Washington, I'm pretty sure, January 21st.
So it'll be like the 5 Million Man March.
Million Man March from back in
95,
the day. 95. Yeah. So that's we're promoting that as well. We're having in many cities meetings within the next week or so before the holidays hit. In for real, on planning meetings for the January 20th. So we'll see how it goes. But anything that can happen, in Worcester, for example, where I'm helping to organize right now, we're hoping for student walkouts. We're trying to organize those. We're trying to organize a rally for working people late in the afternoon when people get off work or close to that when they get off work. And then if it turns out there isn't the same mood, and there won't be, probably, the same mood there was right after the election, we'll at least do a standout, you know, or something. We'll see how it goes. But I think there's a mood is still there for student walkouts. But I'm not sure we're going to get like 400 or 500 people out again. We'll see. Maybe we'll get more. You know, I don't know. But Inauguration Day, January 20th, a big target day, not target in terms of the store, but target in terms of targeting the Trump administration. And if we, think about it, if we get a big, big response on that day, if there is a big response on that day from students and working people, it just shoots, it's like shooting a cannon across the bow of the Trump frigate, the Trump warship. You know, it'll be like, hey, you want to try all this stuff?
The cruiser.
Yeah, the cruiser, the Trump cruiser. You want to try all this stuff? Boom, wait a minute. There's the people, the millions and millions that never voted for you.
Battleship sunk.
The ones that know better. Hey, you're not going to get away with it. You know, and it's very important to do that. And it will demoralize the right wingers that are trying
to
use
Nixon.
That.
Oh, yeah, I better put these progressive things in play.
To save the system.
Push.
It's
from us, not from, you know.
And people like, the way that the different wings of the bourgeois think about elections is they're always thinking about the next election right away. So if they want the Trump regime to have the facade of being popular, then they have to make it look good. And it's hard to make things look good when there are millions and millions of people
on
the street.
Who you got for
millions of people protesting on the street? Yeah,
for education.
Yeah, child was it?
Yeah, she's pro. Charter.
Yeah,
yes, on number two, basically.
Yeah. No, it wasn't her. I'm sorry. That was somebody else. Yeah, no, I understand. Yeah. Yeah. No, and by the way, that what Diego's referring to on question two in Massachusetts, I think we mentioned this on the show right after the election, but question two in Massachusetts was a statewide referendum backed by big bank capital in New York. There's a whole cabal of Koch brothers and Bill Gates. It includes so-called liberals and so-called conservatives among the capitalist class that are bankrolling privatization of schools. By the way, Clinton supported it, supports charter schools. Obama supports charter schools. Here in Massachusetts, Governor Baker, again, you might see right-wing populism in action. Just check out Baker in Massachusetts. And a bunch of Democrats all supported. Everyone got together, it seemed to me. I've seen most people got together, all the corporate media, including national propaganda radio affiliates here in Massachusetts, they all got together in favor of question two of lifting the cap on charter schools. And if you read the fine print, it wasn't just for 1 year. It was they could increase every year after this referendum got passed by a certain amount charter schools. And they would say things like this guy Jim Browdy and Marjorie Egan on, for example, on NPR, WGBH, I think it is. They have like a 3-hour liberal talk show every day, and it's the most conservative, and it's in a real sense of conservative, or let's say the most liberal in the real sense of liberal show you ever want to hear, meaning that they will like right now they're kissing up to Trump, you know, after opposing him, and when they were opposing him they were so obviously pro Clinton, which I mean I don't care either way, but they were obviously so pro Clinton. But they pretended to be objective, you know, and I don't want to go into a whole critique of this show. It's pretty typical propaganda within the confines of corporate media propaganda. But what I wanted to get at was that they also were basically trashing the teachers' union.